Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. On this week's program, I'd like to discuss a big item in the news, Trump administration's move to shut down the Department of Education. President Trump tapped Linda McMahon, founder of the World Wrestling Entertainment Company, Titan Sports, to be the next U.S. Secretary of Education. And Trump appointed her to close down the Department of Education. A quote from an op-ed by McMahon, "I took office as Secretary of Education with a mission unlike any of my predecessors, to oversee the responsibility and the permanent closure of the very department I now lead. This is not a routine mission. It's a transformation driven by the clear will of the American people to return education to the states and the decisive election of President Donald Trump." So the Department of Education employs 4,200 workers. The average salary is $145,000 per year. So do the math, that's about $1 billion in salary. And I always like to see it as it takes the tax dollars of about 1 million Americans to support this staff. In March, McMahon laid off 1,300 employees from the Department of Education. 570 have taken buyouts. That brings the department down to about 2,200 workers. The Department of Education has also canceled about $350 million in grants, which were promoting woke ideology. $350 million was spent on regional education laboratories to advise schools to undertake equity audits and equity conversations, basically DEI ideological training and requirements. The Department of Education accounts for 4% of all federal spending, which is a huge amount for one department. Now, opponents will claim that it's only 4%, but that thinking is part of the problem. Every department claims that it's only spending a small percentage, but taken together, the federal government is going bankrupt. Now, the Department of Education sounds like a department that has been around since the inception of the United States, but it's very recent. It was started by President Carter in 1979. There was a Department of Education back in 1867, started by Andrew Johnson. It included three clerks who were responsible for compiling statistics about education, but within a year, it was eliminated. The states saw the department as both unnecessary and a power grab by the federal government. It was believed that education should be the responsibility of the states. The federal government should not be dictating educational policy and spending from Washington. But in 1979, education bureaucrats in the Democrat administration were able to create a Department of Education. And the department has grown every year since, a 750% increase since the year 2000. However, as federal spending on education has increased, student test scores across the nation have decreased. So higher spending on education doesn't equate to better student outcomes. And it doesn't take a PhD in education to figure this out. Education itself is very inexpensive. All of the books for K through 12 have already been written. Pencils and paper are cheap. Desks are cheap. Rooms are cheap. And for motivated students, there is not a need for an army of teachers. Most of the effort in education is personal. Education problems are not a money problem. They're not a method problem. They're not a facility problem. They're not an organizational problem, but a spiritual moral problem. The motivation to learn comes from a godly worldview and a godly environment. In fact, money and facilities and big organizations and certain methods actually work against good K through 12 education. They become distractions. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. It all begins with a relationship with God. It's spiritual. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 15. The mind of the prudent acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. And Proverbs 14, 6. Knowledge is easy to the one who has understanding. And I know in my own personal life and in my conversion to Christ, that really propelled my education. I was now motivated to read hundreds of books without it costing the taxpayers a dime. Remember Abraham Lincoln? He had only 1 year of formal education, but self-taught himself with books. I have 4 boys who we homeschooled, and it cost us about $2,000 per year to educate all 4 of them. We were quite poor. Most of their classes they watched on video. And what took 7 hours a day for the public schools to teach, they were done in about 3 hours. And all 4 of them graduated from college with honors, and they're now in professional careers. And it's not as if we were some sort of high IQ family. We played a lot. Motocross, bikes and blades, camping. Growing up was fun for them. They weren't stuck in a concrete institutional building all day. Well, here's a way to explain it. If people are godly, education will happen indigenously. Students will receive an excellent education, even with the most meager of resources, because that's the natural result of the fruit of the Spirit. In the 1700s, America had the most literate population in the world. And it was all done voluntarily, without any government money, without any government programs. However, if people are ungodly, all the money in the world and all the programs will eventually not educate, because laziness and indifference toward education is a fruit of the flesh. So education is not a function of the government spending money. It's a function of biblical truth, evangelism, prayer, and those are things that are mostly out of the scope of government. One of the main errors in all this is that people are looking to the wrong solution for the problem. Now, I do have to insert here an explanation. Because China is a secular, ungodly state, but the students score well in education. And the answer isn't complicated. Just one generation ago, the Chinese people were in poverty, whereas Americans have been prosperous for centuries. Today, students in China, they're not pampered. If they don't get good grades, they're not allowed to go to college, and they will be working in a shoe factory. So students are driven out of fear and out of need. But that motivation will only last for a little while. It will eventually collapse. But for now, those students are driven by need. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 26. A worker's appetite works for him, for his hunger urges him on. So when I hear about eliminating the Department of Education, laying off all of these education bureaucrats, I hear about the spending cuts, I rejoice. Because overall, it will be an improvement for education in America. Because not only doesn't the Department of Education educate, it hinders education by pushing on schools leftist ideology and top-down controls, drowning schools with requirements and reports. Here's an interesting article in an interview. Education leaders say Trump's dismantling key government agency saves education. This is a historic moment, said Oklahoma Education Superintendent Ryan Walters. Quote from Walters, rather than helping to implement effective education systems, The Department of Education has long been co-opted by radical teacher unions like the American Federation of Teachers, which has been pushing diversity, equity, and inclusion, and other leftist ideologies in states, including Oklahoma. The disruption of education was the federalization of education and the unionization of education. That's what got us away from the concepts of schools that value the community, the value of family, the value of individuals. You have thousands of bureaucrats in Washington that are pushing a left-wing agenda, the most radical agenda the country has ever seen. They're teaching kids to hate the country. They're teaching kids to hate their faith. You can talk to teachers about the type of training the feds were requiring them to go to. These were not helping them drive student achievement in the classroom. It was pushing a left-wing agenda on the kids. I was very sharp in my response to why are we talking about transgenderism in Algebra 1 class. There's no connection between the two. But it shows you how far they're willing to go with their woke ideology, with the strategy to undermine American society and undermine the family unit. The results are seen in students' test scores. All the test scores have shown that they've gotten worse since the disruption occurred. Nearly every social factor has gotten worse. Teenage suicide, teenage drug use, the disintegration of the family unit. All of these things coincided in part with the creation of the Federal Department of Education and the rise of teacher unions. Cutting the department will free up huge sums of funds that instead of paying bureaucrat salaries will instead go straight to the students for education and for teachers. The cuts Ryan Walters made to the Oklahoma Education Department, in which he reduced the state's bureaucracy by 150 employees, saved millions, creating opportunities for tutoring programs and offering more competitive salaries to hire top talent teachers. Walter said, you're going to see that times 1,000 with the Federal Department of Education being eliminated, unquote, Oklahoma Education Superintendent Ryan Walters. And I would add that the 4,200 employees at the Department of Education would do more good in America if they simply left their offices in Washington and took jobs actually teaching students the three R's. Reading, writing, and arithmetic. And notice that the bureaucratic system itself is the problem. Because of the very nature of bureaucracies, they support the false teachers, they support the wolves in sheep's clothing. Systems that control, rather than doing the work, always attract and create a leisure bureaucratic class. And with time on their hands, they always further ungodliness. If you need a verse for that, Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 49. So on March 20th, President Trump signed an executive order to instruct the Department of Education to work toward the dismantling of the department. Now, Trump can't close it, but he can reduce it to one small office. As a department administration, the president actually has complete control over the department. In 1979, President Carter made it into a cabinet-level department. So one would imagine that the president could simply pass an executive order to eliminate the department. But at the same time, Congress also passed a bill making it a federal department. Well, here are some clips from the president's press conference.
Today we take a very historic action that was 45 years in the making. In a few moments, I will sign an executive order to begin eliminating the Federal Department of Education once and for all. And it sounds strange, doesn't it? Department of Education, we're going to eliminate it. And everybody knows it's right. And the Democrats know it's right, and I hope they're going to be voting for it because ultimately it may come before them. But everybody knows it's right, and we have to get our children educated. We're not doing well with the world of education in this country, and we haven't for a long time. been amazing how popular this has been. I tell people that this is what I'm doing today, and they say, oh, it's about time. Everybody says it. Republicans and Democrats have said it. When President Carter created the Federal Education Department in 1979, it was opposed by members of his own cabinet, as well as the American Federation of Teachers, the New York Times editorial board, and the famed Democrat Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. History has proven them right, absolutely right. After 45 years, the United States spends more money on education by far than any other country, and spends likewise by far more money per pupil than any country, and it's not even close. But yet, we rank near the bottom of the list in terms of success. It's an amazing stat. Those are two stats you don't want. The most money spent per pupil, and you're at the bottom of the list. And that's where we are, like it or not. And we've been there for a long time. 70% of eighth graders are not proficient in either reading or in math. 70%. 40% of fourth graders lack even basic reading skills, can't read. Students in our public elementary and middle schools score worse in reading today than when the department opened, by a lot. In Baltimore, 40% of the high schools have zero students who can do basic mathematics. Not even the very simplest of mathematics. I said, give me your definition of basic. And they're talking about like adding a few numbers together. Despite these breathtaking failures, the department's discretionary budget has exploded by 600% in a very short period of time, and it employs bureaucrats in buildings all over Washington, D.C. And as a former real estate person, I will tell you, I ride through the streets of Washington and it says Department of Education, Department of Education. I said, how do you fill those buildings? It's crazy what's happened over the years. I'm pleased to report that after offering these federal employees two generous buyout options, and they were very generous, and they're good people, but they were very generous. My administration has initiated a reduction in force, and we're already cutting numbers that were really surprising to a lot that we were able to do it so successfully. And we've cut the number of bureaucrats in half. 50% have taken office, which is great. Thank you. But the department's useful functions, and they're in charge of them, Pell Grants, Title I funding, resources for children with disabilities and special needs will be preserved, fully preserved. They're all going to be so. If the department, we're going to shut it down and shut it down as quickly as possible. It's doing us no good. We want to return our students to the states where just some of the governors here are so happy about this. They want education to come back to them, to come back to the states, and they're going to do a phenomenal job. You know, if you look, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, I have to tell you, I give them a lot of credit. China's top 10. And so we can't now say that bigness is making it impossible to educate, because China's very big. But you have countries that do a very good job in education. And I really believe, like some of the governors here today, from states that run very, very well, including a big state like Texas, but states that run very well are going to have education that will be as good as Norway, Denmark, Sweden, and those top Finland, those top countries that do so well with education. I think they'll do every bit as well. And then you'll have some laggards, and we'll work with them. And we can all tell you who the laggards will be right now, probably, but let's not get into that. But we're going to be returning education, very simply, back to the states where it belongs. And this is a very popular thing to do, but much more importantly, it's a common sense thing to do, and it's going to work. Absolutely, it's going to work. And I can tell you from dealing with the governors and others in the state, they want it so badly. They want to take their children back and really teach their children individually. Probably the cost will be half, and the education will be maybe many, many times better. So we look forward to this. I want to just make one little personal statement. Teachers, to me, are among the most important people in this country. And we're going to take care of our teachers. And I don't care if they're in the union or not in the union. That doesn't matter. But we're going to take care of our teachers. And I believe the states will take actually better care of them than they are taken care of right now. They'll work all sorts of systems. And
so I wish I had time to play the entire press conference, but you can listen to that on your own. The main argument for dismantling the Department of Education is that's a waste of taxpayer money. The states can do a much better job without the bureaucratic overlords. And having a department doesn't help in education. And now there are educational statistics against the department to prove the point. So dissolving the department makes great sense. Get rid of the waste. Give education fully to the states. And states that do poorly will have to improve. They will have to compete. They cannot hide under a big tent. Eliminating the department is just common sense. Even Randy Weingarten, head of the teachers union, said that we can do without the Department of Education. Although she has since changed her mind. Now, if you go online, there are hundreds of articles on the left defending the Department of Education. And the main reason given to keep the department is that the department is necessary for promoting educational equity for all students. It's somewhat of a socialist mindset. You know, as in economics, in order for there to be fairness, there needs to be big government to collect and redistribute wealth. Well, the same mindset carries over to education. There needs to be a big government entity to collect and redistribute education, to police education, to control education. And in discussing the Department of Education with friends and family and coworkers, you will find that it all comes down to people's larger worldview, their theological, social ideology, their understanding of man, sin, redemption, and the institution of government. And this is the reason people will talk past each other when it comes to discussing the efficacy of federal departments. I mean, if you have a leftist worldview, the Department of Education is great and has to be made great. But if you lean to the right, the Department of Education is likely part of the problem. Here's a quick clip from Carter and Reagan.
My guess is that the best move for the quality of life in America in the future might very well be this establishment of this new Department of Education.
The budget plan I submit to you on February 8th will realize major savings by dismantling the Departments of Energy and Education.
So Carter says, my guess is that the best move for better quality of life in America is the establishment of the new Department of Education, while Reagan claims it hurts America and must be eliminated. And my question is why? Why does Carter guess as an a priori assumption that a government agency over education will be the best move to increase the quality of life in America? Well, even in 1979, others were saying it's a bad idea. Well, because Jimmy Carter was a Democrat statist, where government is the solution, and government must grow larger. And this goes really, really, really deep. So much so that you're not going to change anyone's mind unless you're able to reprogram their entire worldview from the ground up. People think these political decisions are based upon outcomes, costs, statistics, but no, it's really worldview. And by the way, there is a right and a wrong worldview. And the right worldview is developed by having a serious fidelity to the scripture. To sum it up in a sentence, a Christian worldview draws people away from a trust in man and government. It better understands the sinful nature of man, that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But for the unsaved, Revelation chapter 13, they worship the beast. And this is why so often it takes years of discipleship for Christians to begin to change their political views, especially if they have entered the faith with a previously developed political bias. Here's an article from Reuters. Elon Musk's cuts based more on political ideology than real cost savings. Well, actually, the cuts are really saving costs. But the article is right that support for Doge is not about the money, it's not about the cost savings, it's about one's political ideology. If one believes in big government, then whatever big government does must lean somehow toward the positive. So government cuts must be a bad thing, somehow. In a recent Fox News interview with Elon Musk and the Doge team, Elon made this point, quote, "Whenever they attack us, they never attack any of the specifics. They will say what we're doing is somehow unconstitutional or illegal or whatever. So we ask, what line of cost savings do you disagree with? And they can't point to any." Unquote. And in this we see it's really not about financial justice. It's about maintaining their ideological belief in government. The protests and the burning of Teslas is really not about Doge. It's a response to an attack on their beliefs about the state. So let me conclude with six reasons why there is so much opposition to Doge and the elimination of the Department of Education. There are really more than six reasons, but I've just jotted down here six. First, the reason I just gave: statism, socialism, a worldview that believes in government. Not in God we trust, but in government we trust. As we wouldn't want to shrink God, they don't want to shrink government. And for those who put the emphasis on a belief in government, if you're for education, the federal government has to be involved, no questions asked. The second reason for opposition would be Trump derangement syndrome, because Bill Clinton and Obama said the exact same thing about cutting government spending as now Trump and Musk. But it was considered great when the Democrats talked about it. One of the benefits of technology is that we have their words on record. Bill Clinton commissioned Al Gore to find ways to cut government spending and jobs, and Al Gore cut 400,000 federal jobs. President Obama also laid out the same government cuts as Trump, but since he was a Democrat, it was just fine. Here is Obama making that case, saying that we need to look at every dime.
"Everyone knows that getting rid of the deficit will require some tough decisions, and that includes cutting back on billions of dollars in programs that a lot of people care about. But what should be easy is getting rid of the pointless waste and stupid spending that doesn't benefit anybody. Waste we should be getting rid of even if we didn't have a deficit. Sure, some of these cuts aren't that big, but no amount of waste is acceptable. Not when it's your money. Not at a time when so many Americans are already cutting back. Just as families are living within their means, government should too. Did you know that the federal government pays for a website devoted to a folk music ensemble made up of forest rangers? They're called the Fiddlin' Foresters. I'll put their music on my iPod, but I'm not paying for their website. And there are hundreds of similar sites that we should consolidate or just get rid of. By the way, you're not only paying for websites no one needs, you're paying for thousands of buildings all across the country no one uses. For the last decade, the government's owned a massive and completely empty warehouse in the middle of Brooklyn, for example. Now, the government hadn't been able to sell this building and others like it because of red tape and Washington politics that held things up for years. But we're finally cutting through all that and plan to get rid of these buildings in the months ahead. We need to step up our game. We need to go after every dime. We need to make government work for you. That's why, starting today, I've asked the Vice President to lead a renewed effort to hunt down misspent tax dollars in every agency and department of this government. We're calling it the Campaign to Cut Waste, and I know Joe's the right man to lead it, because nobody messes with Joe.
Now, for the record, nothing was really done during the Obama administration. Joe Biden did absolutely nothing. But as one satirist in the 19th century once said, there is nothing more base than asking the party of the man behind a policy before deciding whether the policy is good or bad. Now, the reason for Trump derangement syndrome is that there's opposition to Trump's stance on moral issues such as abortion and transgenderism. And what happens is that these people would rather bankrupt the country than give up their immoral positions, and this becomes a self-inflicted judgment. Reason number three for opposing the elimination of the Department of Education would be personal financial interest. Money talks, follow the money. Most people judge the right and wrong of a policy based on what puts money in their own pocket. They suppose that godliness or values that are right are the values that are a means of gain. In that Fox interview with Doge, Elon Musk said something that's all too true. When they cut government programs, the people who complain the most are the fraudsters. And you can identify who is cheating the system, who is lining their pocket, by seeing who complains the most. Reason number four for opposing the elimination of the Department of Education is similar to reason number three, personal financial interest. But additionally, it's a charity mindset in regard to government. Believe it or not, there are many people who see government jobs as government charity. Almost like a two-tiered charity system, there is welfare and food stamps for those who are unemployed and unemployable. And there ought to also be available government jobs for people. Jobs that pay generous. Jobs that pay living wages, especially for those who struggle to find work in the private sector. For these people, government is supposed to create jobs so that there is full employment. Plus, the government is to set an example by creating jobs that are stress-free and with less work, not like the fierce competition and the tireless work that it takes to survive in the private sector. There's a whole class of people who despise work in the private sector, where you can be fired at any time for any reason, where one actually has to produce enough labor to cover their own salary and the cost of overhead. You can only get paid by producing, not by forcing taxpayers to pay your salary. And this is the mindset of Bernie Sanders and AOC. Right now, they're going around the country holding rallies against the Trump administration, promoting this charity of government mindset. And this mindset needs to be labeled and identified. There's probably at least 20% of people in America who think this way. And these people are communists at heart. They hate God's command to work by the sweat of the brow, and they hate God's accountability. Let me just give you a leftist example of this, a leftist interpretation of scripture. In the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 4, verse 27, Daniel gives King Nebuchadnezzar counsel that he needs to break away from his sins by doing righteousness, and he needs to break away from his sins by showing mercy to the poor, so that there would be a prolonging of his kingdom and prosperity. Now, for some, if Nebuchadnezzar is to be charitable and to fulfill Daniel's words, Nebuchadnezzar would have to hire back all of those he laid off in his Department of Education. See, the onus is not on the government workers for fleecing the taxpayers. The onus is put upon the taxpayers for not being charitable to those who work for government. And when one has such a perspective, and you see people having that perspective, it's shocking. because it's hard to imagine people actually think this way, but they're all confused in regard to their understanding of the role of government in regard to charity and work. And reason number five for opposing a reduction in the size of government is similar to reason four. These people have a false belief that the government is supposed to give mercy and grace. Now, this is not communicated theologically. This is an attitude that operates under the surface without any formal defense. It's the attitude that government needs to be nice. Criminals should receive grace and forgiveness and not be punished for their crimes, at least not punished much. And illegals should receive grace and be allowed to stay. After all, Christians are supposed to be dispensers of grace. So also the government. Grace is getting the blessing that we do not deserve. And mercy is not getting the punishment that we do deserve. And these people believe that the state should be dispensing grace and mercy. The government shouldn't be laying anyone off. It should be helping people, making life easier for people. Trump and the Republicans, in their emphasis on righteousness and law, look like the bad man, the Pharisee, the harsh judge. Those who see government as being all about mercy want government to be more like Kamala Harris, who wants to help people, who wants to support people, to not offend. Evangelicals that support the Democrats have this view of government and Christianity. There are whole YouTube channels and websites that teach this view, mostly coming from Never Trumpers and those who are never Republican. But in order to get a correct balance in this, it takes a very deep understanding of the difference between the role of government as laid out in Scripture versus the role of the individual and the church. The New Testament emphasis is that the role of government is not to dispense grace, but to be an avenger for God, taking wrath on the ones who practice evil. And that's what the Apostle Paul, the Apostle of Grace, wrote. But again, notice that the only way to have a proper view on this is to be steeped in Scripture, understanding enough of Scripture to have the right balance. Now that I think about it, a whole program could be dedicated to this one issue, grace or law in regard to government policy. Now, the sixth reason for opposing the administration's shrinking of government has to do with power. And I'll just mention this in passing. It's really difficult to come up with a text in Scripture where a king had laid off people and the people protested. The only example that comes to my mind is when God gave the throne of Israel to King David, the house of Saul, his relatives, his friends, his commanders were enraged because they refused to let go of power. Because think about it, they had a good thing going. They were living the upper class life. They were the elites. They lived off of the power to tax, but now they would have to return to regular work. So their opposition wasn't so much about the person of David. Their opposition to David was because David on the throne meant that they would lose their power. And we often assume that when David came to the throne, all was well in Israel. But no, a battle went on between the house of Saul and the house of David for many years. And the house of Saul worked continuously and deceptively to try to take down the house of David so that Saul's constituency could get back into power. 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 1, now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, and David grew steadily stronger, but the house of Saul grew weaker continually. But here's the point. The average citizen in Israel was expected to so walk with God so as to rightly discern which administration was of God and which was not. Psalm 119, 130, the unfolding of your word gives light. It gives understanding to the simple. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below, even email. And may Jesus Christ reign.